Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday, the 24th of November. Today, I'm joined by India Hartstong, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hi there, India. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to be back on the podcast.
Oh, it's very nice to have you back. It's been a while, isn't it? What did you find most interesting in Watson's Daily today?
Yeah, I was really interested in the story about how London's managed to attract its first SPAC after the rule change.
Yeah.
So the venture capital firm Hambro Perks has that honour, and it's trying to raise up to £150 million to help it merge with a fast-growing private European tech business. So we see that the government is trying to relax the rules. They're trying to attract more SPAC activity in London. I just think it's come a little bit late because you know that SPACs are really attractive capital vehicles when there are periods of market dislocation, when there's a lot of uncertainty around whether an IPO will be successful. And so we've had a lot of activity in COVID because there's just been so much uncertainty in the market where, you know, companies are just unsure if this is the best way to go about raising capital. And I think these days, or now that you know, COVID has somewhat gotten better, rules have been relaxed, and things are slowly getting back to normal, I think there are a lot more options now open. So I think a traditional IPO is more attractive now. You've got a lot of private equity firms. I'm also really surprised that this listing is coming from a venture capital firm, because I would have assumed that they would want to pursue growth through venture capital, actually, and not a SPAC. So what do you think about this story?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting story because, as you rightly said, I mean, there always have been a lot of different avenues that companies can pursue if they want to actually raise some money. So if we go back to the end of last year, beginning of this, SPACs were really popular because they provided a very quick way for companies to get to market. It really shortens the time that it takes to do this, because in order to do an IPO, a company has to go to, you know, tick off lots of different things on a massive list, and it costs money and all this kind of thing as well. What this whole SPAC thing does is a company lists as a SPAC. So it jumps through all the hoops. And then what it then goes and does is it goes out and it finds privately owned businesses that need money, invests, you know, buys that company, and then they do a reverse merger, which then means that that SPAC becomes the company, or becomes the target company, and then that is, you know, effectively listed on the stock exchange. But anyway, my point there is that was very popular. That has been very popular. But I think over time, there have been a lot of failed SPAC-backed deals. And I think that companies are looking at other alternatives in preference to SPACs. So whereas SPACs used to be very attractive, hot and exciting, especially last year, I feel that now there are a lot more private equity firms with more money that are looking to buy things. Also, you've got the investment banks as well, who are very keen to do IPOs, as they are always, because the fees are so high. And the other thing as well, which I guess ties in with some of the other stuff that we're talking about in today's Watson's Daily, is that there's also industry consolidation as well. So for instance, you've got get the rapid food delivery firm, Get Here. I love that name because it does sound like Get Here. so Get Here has bought its rival Wheezy in a very fragmented market, for instance. So my point is that so rather than just a SPAC, you've got private equity. You could either raise money by private equity, but also you could do an IPO, or you could actually try and consolidate with rival or rivals. Again, all different options, and I just think that SPACs have gone down the priority list. Mm-hmm. So I almost wonder whether this latest development is kind of a bit late, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I likened it to in Watson's Daily as turning up to a frat party with a pizza at 6 o'clock in the morning after everyone is comatose on the sofa and on the floor, saying where's the party at? It kind of feels to me like things have passed by, but it will be interesting to see what happens. I mean, the clock is ticking now. They've got 15 months to buy something interesting that no one else finds interesting. I kind of wonder whether are they just going to get the dregs of stuff that no one wants or what. I don't know, really. And also, just to go on to your the question you asked about why don't they just be VC about it, I just wondered again with that, maybe, and I really don't know, this is just me guessing, but maybe because VCs are generally tend to go in earlier at an earlier stage, maybe this gives them the option of their favorite VC backed businesses in their stable. This maybe offers some of these businesses the option of going the whole hog and doing an IPO. So it just might mean that they're trying to offer give their own investments more options, possibly.
Yeah. I do think it's also sort of a way to market themselves to get greater awareness. Mm. But I just think, one of the advantages of a SPAC is a quicker timeline. But on the other hand, you are also limited by that time. So you have to, have an acquisition at a certain time. So you mentioned they have to do this in 15 months. Whereas I think if they would have gone the venture capital route, and seeing as they are a venture capital firm, they really specialize in that, they would have never been constrained by the time. And I also think just generally with SPACs, you have this redemption option. And so it could be that even when they get the funding, they get their £150 million, it could be that certain shareholders just they don't want to be part of it, and because they're given this redemption option, it's basically a risk-free investment for them, and so they would either have to have these non-redemption agreements, or they would have to somehow secure backstop financing to replace the funds lost. And I just think it's a lot of work for a firm that is used to doing venture capital and that could pursue alternative routes.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it does, is it? But it'll be interesting to see. I suspect there's going to be a lot more commentary on this. We'll see more as time goes on, because this is the first one. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people will find this in itself quite interesting. So it's definitely a story that I'd like to keep on top of, and we'll certainly let people know more as we find out more about it. I guess that's an ongoing story.
Yeah, definitely. But you also had a story that you were interested in that it seems like it has a lot of potential for the future. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. The story I thought I'd share with people today on the podcast is this whole idea of Compass providing dark kind of canteens or kitchens, but whichever whatever you want to call them. But so Compass is the largest catering company in the world, and it's British. And anyway, what they've done is they've set up. So they basically, what they've done is they have suffered under COVID, because they are well known for providing catering for canteens and things, work canteens, and I suppose, you know, things like sports grounds and stuff like that. That, you know, that mass catering is where they're at. Now, what they've done is they apparently they've got 12 remote kitchens in the UK and Ireland, and the idea of those is that they're going to prepare and deliver meals to clients. So this is more of a business to business, kind of thing. And I just thought that was, it's interesting that they are trying to adapt, because the thing is, people are coming back to offices, but not in such great numbers. So they need to find other ways of making money. And I think that they're trying to apparently target this at companies that are maybe too small to justify a full catering, you know, canteen service. And I thought it was interesting, because I thought maybe this was a really nice way for them to get their name in front of potential clients. And when those clients grow, they will presumably at least have a chat. You know, they'll, Compass will at least be with, you know, in with a shout of getting the lucrative contract with these clients. But I thought it was quite interesting. I mean, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's a, they've really looked into diversifying or trying to be adaptable in the current circumstances. And I think we're increasingly working in a sort of, you know, hybrid way, because not everyone is going to come back to office and then work, you know, 24/7 or all days in the office. There are going to be a lot of people that decide to work home. So you might have it that half the office is there and half not. And so what would have been a large office, there's now, you know, fewer people in the office. And so it's not just for smaller companies, but they can also offer their services for when there's a situation of hybrid working and there are fewer people in the office, and that it's just easier for them to accommodate them like that. And I'm really surprised that this sort of dark kitchen idea is only happening now, because I would have thought, you know, irrespective of what Compass is doing and the pandemic, even before that, ordering stuff online was attractive. There are a lot of people that still ordered stuff online. And I just think that having these dark kitchen spaces is great, because it means that you can go to, you can decide, let me open up a kitchen in an, I mean, you talked about, we talked about in the call, below some train tracks in an area where no customer would go, I really want to eat there. And, you know, it's cheaper real estate, and you're really saving, you're cutting costs in places where it's, you know, really expensive. And I think it means that also, if you have people that live near where all your dark kitchens are, it's much easier to, you know, you can travel on a scooter, or it's just much easier to reach them. And so they'll also, you'll benefit from faster serving times, and that would just ensure that the service you're offering is, you know, to the greatest extent that it can be, an exceptional service. And I think that at the end of the day, that can only really be a good thing. And also just environmentally, that you're not traveling, for instance, all across London because you just have one kitchen or a few kitchens that are open. But I think with dark kitchens, it really means that you can cover the entire area. You can go to places, you go, or you can set it up in places where no one else would set up, you know, a catering service or just a restaurant generally. And you can benefit from being close to people who are ordering, who are ordering your food.
No, definitely. I mean, that's definitely the whole idea behind dark kitchens, is it provides convenience. It's a lot cheaper as well, you know, to do these things, because you're not having to make kind of, you know, table, you know, have an area for tables and all the other things that you need for when you've got customers actually coming in. So I think it's very good. And you know, I did, like I say, in during the, well, like we said in that, in an earlier call, that Actually, I wonder whether they could expand this kind of dark kitchen for businesses type of idea into doing dark kitchens for big restaurant chains, for instance, because they've already got the staff. Presumably their costs will be way lower as well. I mean, to set up a kitchen, if you've got Compass doing it, given its size, it must be able to, equip these. Well, first of all, build them really quickly. Secondly, would be able to do them cheaply as well. Mm-hmm. So I wonder whether that is something that they could be getting into.
It also means that you have access to more customers, mm-hmm. because if you were just operating sort of restaurants or whatever, where people would actually have to go to the restaurant, there's a limited capacity. You only have so much space to serve so many people. But if you have these dark kitchens, then it means that you can be, producing a lot of the food quite quickly, and then you can be serving people who might not have ordered your food because they would have said, well, that the place is an hour away. It's going to take an hour to deliver the food. I don't want to order from them. But because you have the dark kitchens, it just expedites the whole process. And it means that, people just generally find it a more attractive service. And I think this is really only an opportunity for them to grow. And I think they should really leverage the current environment that we're in to boost profits in any way that they can. So I think this change will be good for them. But if you disagree, let me know.
No, I tell you what, I just had a funny idea, right? If you had, let's say Compass provides your, let's say your city centre, Compass is servicing your office in, let's say, Bank, okay? And they also happen to have a dark kitchen that does KFC. For consumers. So there's the business to business bit where you provide the stuff for the offices and that sort of stuff. And then, but they also right next to it have a KFC dark kitchen. Mm-hmm. I just thought, wouldn't it be funny if you were sitting in a business meeting and you could order a KFC in your business meeting? I just think that would be amazing. And certainly a conversation starter. But anyway, I think that, these things are, dark kitchens, etc., are very interesting. And I personally think that they could be used for more different types of catering.
Yeah.
And so I think that we are at the beginning of all this, because it just seems as well that people just want more and more and more convenience. I mean, this whole thing about rapid food delivery and things like that, people are just becoming more impatient and wanting more and doing less, and so maybe there are more business opportunities here. I mean, they do say that that innovation is powered by need, isn't it? And maybe the whole thing that happened with Compass under lockdown, in that maybe it was a way of almost like a message saying, you're too exposed to canteens and this kind of thing. And maybe this is a time where they can use their expertise to actually expand in different areas and offer scale, because that's the thing, they can, that's what they can do. They can offer scale. They've got the expertise, they've got the scale, they've got the staff. So, if they can harness that and then use it, I think that would be highly lucrative. But we shall see.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so there we go. Flights of fancy in food for today in Watson's Daily. I think we'll stop it there before we give too many gems of information to Compass and how they can make loads of money in the future. We'll have to charge for our own consultancy fee for that, I think, India. That's what we'll have to do. But first of all, thank you very much, India, for your time today.
No worries.
Really appreciate it. And Thank you also, as always, to the listeners for listening to us and supporting this podcast. So I will leave you there. And Indy and I will be back tomorrow with more stories. So until then, have a lovely day and speak to you again soon. Many thanks. Bye.